I didn't realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a backseat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills, so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Tuesday, the 11th of August, 2020. On the podcast today, Andrew Player, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources, answers private investors' questions on Vaite Supply and other operations. Also on the podcast, Francesca Morgan from Vox interviews Tim Watts of Shield Therapeutics, who explains the headline results from the reanalysis of the study on its lead product, Feraccru Acrifer. Plus, as always, I have two lists for you, the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs too. By the way, you can check out both these lists, top 10 versions of these lists, at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you'll see lots of the content, blog posts from Francesca, for example, Europa Metals Inc.'s marketing agreement with Conrad Partners, i3 Energy Advances gain energy traction worth $30 million, another blog post there, Salt Lake Potash completes institutional offer, and also there's videos, check it out at voxmarkets.co.uk, where you can see our COVID-19 index. Right now, the biggest riser on the COVID-19 index is N4 Pharma, up 10% to 7.65. Biggest faller today is, let me scroll down here, Inspiration Healthcare, down 4.7% to 61 pence. Check that out at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Andrew Player, Chief Executive Officer of Vast Resources, VAST. Andrew, thanks for joining me.
Thank you, Justin, for having me.
That's all right. You know, last week, you sort of released, a couple of weeks back, released an RNS saying good drilling program returns, highly encouraging results from Vaite Supply, and so things are moving on there. And I know you're a very popular stock, and you're always, you know, getting deluged with questions from shareholders. So we got some shareholder questions here to go through. But as always, Andrew, I hate to leave anyone behind. Quick summary as to Vast, please, for people not familiar with it.
Yeah, Vast Resources is an AIM-listed company, obviously, that has operations in Romania and Zimbabwe. We're currently in the process of restarting Vaite Supply, which has already commenced works underground. We're stockpiling ore, and we're getting the flotation plant ready to go into production, which will be the core asset of the business, as well as the Chiatal Community Diamond Concession in Zimbabwe, which is awaiting lockdown to be lifted, so we can commence there as well.
Marvellous stuff. Okay, question number one. Here we go. How is the refinancing process going, and can you update us on the progress?
The process is ongoing and, of course, progressing. And now that we're in a position, because we're so close to production, well, not just production, but sales out of Vaite, we're dealing now with prime banking institutions, and we're very happy with the progress, as it's now an exciting time for the company. But I'd also like to take the opportunity to say that Atlas Capital Markets, who have been our funders to this point, have been continue to be a constructive investment partner. And they shouldn't be confused with the traditional convertible debt provider, because the case in point is that they actually hold security over Vaite Supply. So they're an asset-backed lender with a convertible option. So they're not always motivated to convert. So I'd just like to clarify that for shareholders.
Yeah, okay. Question number two. What is the company's current cash position?
Well, we did a placing a little while back, and we're still retaining quite a considerable amount of cash. So as of today, we still have enough cash in the bank to get us through. So we're cashed up. We're in progress for recommencement of the flotation production by ITSA, and we hope to start the first sales of concentrate shortly. Probably end of August, September is what we're firing this.
Okay. Before we get to the next question, and what is the production rate there you're hoping to achieve there? At the start and the ramp up to where optimum level is?
Well, I mean, there's been a bit of confusion about that. When we did the cold commissioning in December, we were talking about ramping up to 7,000 tonnes a month and then 14,000 tonnes a month. Mm. In normal circumstances, we're running with one flotation line to begin with, so that'll be going for 3 to 4 months once we commence the flotation production, and then we'll ramp up to 14,000 tonnes a month. Oh, yeah. But at 7,000 tonnes a month, the company actually still is, still making money and washing its face. So once we get into full production, well, the first line of production, 7,000 tonnes a month, the company will be able to support the entire company.
Okay.
So everything above that is cream on top.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Next question is, how has the startup process been at Bait Supply?
Well, we've been working very hard to bring both supply into production. There's been some confusions and questions of whether or not we're in production. But I can confirm that as per RNS on the 24th of July and again on the 6th of August, we commence underground and we're still continuing to work towards producing concentrate in the flotation plant as planned. So, we are working underground, and there's a lot of confusion between the difference between production underground and production in the processing plant. We've only started underground. We haven't started producing in the flotation plant.
Okay. Next question is, what are your thoughts with regards to the share price reaction to the drilling results, RNS, yesterday, and that was obviously what it was sent, but I'm assuming the share price, did it react? In which way did it react?
Well, that last week, I mean, obviously disappointed with the flat reaction, but I'm aware of the long journey our current shareholders have been. And while I don't expect there to be an overnight re-rate, we're very excited about the current trajectory of the business, and we hope that's going to be reflected in the share price shortly once we start selling concentrate.
And sort of a follow-up really to this is, can you comment on the actual impact and value of these drilling results and the impact they will have on the business?
Well, if we take into consideration the average grades of copper in mines currently in the 21st century, we say, their average is below 0.5% copper. And you look at the recent assay information released on the RNS, I think it was the 6th of August, at Bait Supply, by grade, Bait is a world-class asset. Not only the copper grades looking extremely encouraging, but the gold and silver content, and now we've got the silver prices where they are. And our modelling was done at the beginning of this year when gold was $12.50 and silver was $14 a gram. And you look at, gold is almost double that and silver is more than double that, and they account for over 30% of our revenue stream. So everything above that is absolute pure profit to the business. And, when you look at some of the grades, I mean, in one of the gold samples, there's a coarse free gold sample with an assay value of 9.15 gram per tonne in situ in a single drill hole. That's not representative of the whole thing, but, when you're talking about the, 1.8 million tonnes that we've previously under the old resource system, and then you add in the new drilling results, which is 75% of that area, so, we're talking... We're doing about 720,000 tonnes of confirmation area. Only 25% is part of that 1.8 million. So that's an additional 550,000 tonnes to add to our resource. And when we get to the JORC later on in September, hopefully September, I'm not going to put a date on it, people see that the quantum of this actual asset. And, so it's very exciting that the gold and the silver and the copper and the lead and the zinc and the molybdenum are all going to show in that JORC. And it's a very promising asset for the company. And these drill results, will be presented in the final report, will finally allow us to share with the market the grades that we've been so excited about for some time. And off the back of that, and we've been criticised, is that we haven't released any figures or production figures or values and cash flows. So under AIM regulation, unless we have third-party validation from an independent source, which the company has refrained from doing because of the extreme costs. I mean, years ago, the company, before my time, spent, $2-3 million on reports for Pixton Peerless at the time, which, we'd rather spend that in opening the mind than doing. Now that we've got to a point where we're dealing with prime banking institutions, we do need to finalise some of those PFSs, and that's in progress at the moment, and that should come alongside with the JORC later on this year.
Yeah, absolutely. And you sort of in there covered the next question, which was, the impact of gold and silver in the drilling results. And of course, as we've seen, gold and silver prices are on fire at the moment, and I can't see them coming back really, especially with all the the money printing and quantitative easing happening. So it's going to be quite significant then, isn't it?
Yeah, and when you consider that historically, up until the 1990s, there's been a correlation between gold and silver, and that sort of outweighed itself at today's prices of gold. I mean, silver should be pushing $40 to $50 a gram, and it's still sitting at $26, $25 a gram. So it still has a lot of upwards movement available to it. And, in very rough and crude basis, every gram of gold that we get out of the ground and into the concentrate is an additional $1 million of free cash flow a year. Just, in rough terms. But we do look forward to, I think by September, October, producing the PFS and being able to finally release cash flows and a PFS to the market.
Yeah, good stuff. Okay, when are you expecting the final metallurgical test results, and will these be published?
Yes, we are expecting them shortly. What's interesting is that we're confident that they will be made available in August, most likely next week. They've just finished the what they call a lock cycle test that simulates the actual plant condition. So it's a full mini flotation of the ore. And so far they've been very good, and we really look forward to sharing those results via RNS, hopefully next week.
Okay. Any further updates on Mania, Blueberry and other remaining assets?
Well, our focus is, since the beginning of 2019, when we restructured the company, has been to focus on the two core assets, and that's Blades Apply and the Chiatzel Community Concession. And we remain focused on both those assets. We're excited, by the mid to long-term asset pipeline, especially with the expanded Manayila license, and currently we're finalising a further 5-year extension on that license. So, many listed companies are focused on single assets. So I'm excited the fact that we've got a great pipeline of assets to expand its production profile, but that's in the future. And the first precedent is to set this sustainable production by its supply. And then we can look to formulate our mind to a long-term development plan for our other assets in Romania.
Yeah, and the final one, is there any update on that? Is it the CHED's community concession in Zimbabwe?
Yeah, I mean, due to COVID and lockdown, we can't provide specific timelines. However, we still do anticipate that we'll sign with the ZCDC and be reassured that the project is continuing. As soon as we have news, we'll relay it. But at this point in time, we've set it back when lockdown started. I know that there's been some news out of Zimbabwe in respect of the diamond fields in Chiatzel with Anjin and outside the Chiatzel diamond fields with El Rosa. But you have to understand that the Anjin had all of their infrastructure in place. The mine just needs to be turned back on, so it's a completely different set of circumstances. We're talking about an alluvial diamond field here in partnership with the ZCDC in the community, and it's a community-focused project. It's a lot more politically sensitive, and it will be forthcoming. It's just a matter of waiting, unfortunately.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Well, as always, as you know, Andrew, I like to get people hitting that follow button if you like the story. So three reasons, if they like what you're doing here but not yet following the story, three reasons why they should add Vast Resources to their watch list, please.
Well, we're highly undervalued, as every CEO will say about their business. But more importantly, we are about to start flotation production in Blades Apply, which is going to contain a very, very high quality copper, gold, lead, zinc and silver and molybdenum concentrates that we have clients for, and that means we're near-term cash generative and what we believe to be a highly profitable business, as well as a future pipeline of work in Romania, and also, of course, the diamonds in Chiatzel community. And we look forward to delivering results to the shareholders after a long-awaited, painstaking for some time period. But we're almost there.
Excellent stuff. Andrew, good to chat to you, and hopefully we'll catch up in the not-too-distant future. Thanks very much.
Thank you very much.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
Joining me today on the podcast is Tim Watts, CEO of Shield Therapeutics. Thank you for joining me, Tim.
Thank you, Francesca. Good morning.
Morning. Now, just quickly for investors who might be listening but aren't necessarily familiar with Shield, could you just tell us a little bit about the company and outline its core mission?
Shield is AIM listed, and the primary product that we have is a treatment for iron deficiency. It's a product which is called Ferrocru in Europe. The brand name is Accrufer in the US. It's been approved in both Europe and the US. It's currently marketed already in Europe by a partner of ours, called a company called Norgine. And we're looking for a partner at the moment in the US. So we have an approved product for the treatment of iron deficiency, which is a very widespread ailment that people suffer from around the world. So the product has very substantial potential. So we're very enthusiastic about the product, and we believe it's got a lot of potential.
That's great. So news came out yesterday, and shares really rallied after you released findings of a reanalysis of a study for your lead iron deficiency product, Ferrocru Accrufer. So perhaps you could take us through what happened and what was the study's intention, and why was the news yesterday a reanalysis?
So the study was designed to compare Ferrocru against, which is an oral product, you take it twice a day, it's a 30 milligram capsule, you take it in the morning, one in the morning, one in the evening. And we wanted to compare that with the other main way of treating iron deficiency, which is using intravenous therapy. And the study ran over a 52-week period. So we recruited 250 inflammatory bowel disease patients who had anemia as a result of iron deficiency. And these patients were randomized in equal numbers to be treated either with Ferrocru or with the intravenous therapy. And then there's really two stages. Over the first 12 weeks, this is the time over which patients need to have their hemoglobin levels restored. So that 12-week period was really about the restoration of their hemoglobin levels. And then after that, up for the rest of the year, up to week 52, the question is, how well are the hemoglobin levels maintained over that period? Another so slightly technical point is that there are really two populations that you can look at of these patients. So everybody who goes into the study, all 250 patients, are automatically put into what's known as the intention to treat population, ITT. It's in the name. We intended to treat them. But there is another subset of the intention to treat population that you can look at and analyze, and that is known as the per protocol population. And in the per protocol population, you only include patients who have followed closely the study as it was designed and not deviated too much. As you can imagine, in a clinical study with patients who are not well, there are all sorts of reasons why patients may not exactly follow the protocol. For example, at week 12, you're supposed to come in for a week 12 visit. If a patient, for whatever reason, comes in early or comes in late, then depending on how many days late, you may decide to exclude such a patient from a per protocol, because you may not get the proper week 12 reading if they're coming in 2 weeks late. So that's just one of a number of examples of why a patient may not be included in the per protocol population. But the per protocol population does give you an interesting read on follow the therapy exactly, then this is how the product reacts. On the other hand, health economics professionals tend to prefer the intention to treat population, because they consider that to more closely resemble the real world than perhaps the per protocol population does. So if we look at the key results we've now seen following the reanalysis, up to week 12, which is the period, as I said, which is about the restoration of the hemoglobin levels, the first thing we looked at was the proportions of patients treated with Ferrocru and treated with intravenous who responded to the therapy. And we responders for this purpose were defined as either having seen an increase in hemoglobin of 2 grams per deciliter in their blood, or the patients who reached the normal levels of hemoglobin. And a normal level of hemoglobin is defined by the World Health Organization as 12 grams per deciliter for women and 13 grams per deciliter for men. So we were able to define these responders in that way. The proportions of Ferrocru patients who responded in the two populations were 67% and 68%. For intravenous, it was 84% and 85%. Now, that particular measure was defined as the study's primary endpoint. And in order to say the study was a success and had met its primary endpoint, we required those proportions of patients to be fairly close to the intravenous arm. And unfortunately, in this particular measure, the percentages were too far away. So the ferric patients' percentages at 67 and 68% were too low compared to the 84 and 85% of intravenous. So in that respect, the study did not meet its primary endpoint. And on that measure, we cannot say that Feraccru is non-inferior to intravenous iron. However, we obviously measure many things in these studies. And what we measure, one of the measures we looked at was the increase in hemoglobin levels at each time point. But over the first 12 weeks, what we saw with Feraccru was that the average increase in hemoglobin levels was around 2.5 grams per deciliter for Feraccru. It was around 3 grams per deciliter for intravenous. So it's a little bit more for intravenous. But from a clinical perspective, from treating patients, an increase of 2 grams per deciliter is regarded as meaningful from a clinical perspective. So we're very pleased with that 12-week result. And actually, that's quite consistent with what we saw in one of our previous clinical studies, which was inflammatory bowel disease patients. And we saw in that study a 2.2 grams per deciliter increase. So this 2.5 average is consistent with that. And it's a good result for patients, because if over that 12-week period you can get a 2 grams per deciliter increase, you're going to you're obviously significantly restoring the hemoglobin levels. So a reasonably good result at the 12-week point. We can't say in terms of responders the product is non-inferior, but nevertheless, we were seeing a good increase in hemoglobin. If we then look at what happens after week 12, so the period from week 13 to week 52, and I said earlier on, this is about the maintenance of hemoglobin. Mm. After week 12, the next scheduled patient visit was at week 24. And what we saw at week 24 was that of 65% of the Feraccru population, and we're now looking at the intention to treat population, because as I said earlier on, that's the one that health economics professionals prefer to look at when they're looking at the long-term and the health economics benefits. So 65% of Feraccru patients had reached normal hemoglobin levels, and so regarded as non-anemic. In the intravenous arm, 68% of patients had reached normal levels. So at that level, for this measure, not a massive difference between the two arms of the study. And then when we looked at the average hemoglobin levels for patients at 24 weeks, 36 weeks, and 52 weeks, which are the time points which patients were scheduled to be assessed, the average hemoglobin levels in the two arms, the Feraccru arm and the intravenous arms, were quite similar for both sets of patients, so quite comparable at that level. But it's also important to understand and consider how the treatment is delivered. I said earlier on, for Feraccru, you take two capsules a day, one in the morning, one in the evening. They deliver 30 milligrams of iron. For intravenous patients, on the other hand, you need an infusion, and that requires a visit to a hospital or a clinic, so you can have your infusion. And typically, you're infused with something in the region of 500 milligrams to 1,000 milligrams of ferric carboxymaltose, which is the infusion substance, or the active ingredient in the infusion substance. So that's clearly there's an inconvenience there of having to go in and have your infusion. What we saw in our study was that the majority of the intravenous patients had more than one infusion in the first 12 weeks. So you're having to come into the clinic at least twice. And in many cases, clearly, patients are going to lose a day's work with the implications that has. So, what we've seen is after 12 weeks, Feraccru patients continuing to take their two capsules a day at home, so quite convenient, they're able to maintain hemoglobin steadily because, if you like, you're taking a regular drip of the iron therapy. Whereas for intravenous patients, you don't get that regular daily top up. So if for whatever reason the patient is continuing to lose iron, and then they're likely to become anemic again. So start to suffer from anemia, start to obviously have the unpleasantness of being anemic. And in our study, what we saw was that 47% of the patients who were seen at week 24, which as I said was the first visit after the week 12 point, 47% of intravenous patients required at least one more infusion. So more cost, more inconvenience. So what you can see from all of this is that, you know, Feraccru over the long term is getting patients to the same levels as intravenous is, but offering considerably more convenience of administration. Whereas the intravenous patients, hemoglobin can fluctuate up when they're treated and then down when they're not being treated. And then when it falls, they start to feel rotten again with their anemia, need further infusions, so generating more cost and inconvenience as well as anemia. And so this database now, which we've thoroughly reanalyzed and checked for its consistency of and made sure we've ironed out the anomalies we had seen earlier on, we've now got a very robust database that can go forward into health economics analyses and be used for pricing and reimbursement applications. So overall, we're very happy with the results of the study and the outcome of the reanalysis.
That sounds great, Tim. You touched on all the key points there. So just to kind of round off into what you were just talking about, looking at the bigger picture, what do these results mean in a kind of as concise a way as you can give me for both patients with iron deficiency anemia and then also SHIELD and its future objectives?
So for patients, we believe these results show that Feraccru is a credible alternative and a cost-effective alternative to intravenous treatment. So we think there's obviously a very significant market opportunity for Feraccru being used instead of intravenous. And from the point of view of the company and the business, we think this database gives ourselves and our partners the ammunition, if you like, to go to prescribers and to payers around the world and to say, look, these are reasons why it makes sense to use Feraccru. And if you are the payer, whether that be a government payer or a private insurance payer in a US context, then it makes sense from a financial point of view to use Feraccru as an alternative to intravenous, and we believe over the long term the results from your patient on your patients will be as good as they would be with intravenous.
That's great. And are you able to? I know you might not be able to disclose certain developments, but are you able to give us a picture of what we can expect next? What are the next steps from this reanalysis?
Well, from the next step from the reanalysis, we will share it with the various partners we have. We have Norgine in Europe. We have SK Pharm is our partner, which we announced in China that we announced in January. We have AOP and EWO, who have smaller markets in Europe and the Middle East. And of course, we're talking to potential partners in the US. So we will be sharing the substantial amount of detail behind this with the partners so that they can assess how best they can use that in their own commercial endeavours.
That's great, Tim. Thank you. Now, just to close off, if you could give our audience members three reasons to add Shield Therapeutics to their Vox Market watch list, that would be great.
I think the first reason is that, as we've been very public about, we are in the process of seeking a US partner, and clearly, we believe that once we have found a partner and announced that deal, that there's upside potential for the share price. Beyond that, I'm not sure I've got two further reasons, but I would say one overriding reason is this product, iron deficiency anemia, and iron deficiency is very widespread throughout the world. And there are many patients who are treated, but there's also a huge number of patients who are not treated, in particular because the current oral therapies, the old-fashioned oral therapies, if you like, which have been around for a long time, are not well treated. And therefore, we believe that Feraccru has a great opportunity not only to take market share from intravenous products, but also to enable patients who don't tolerate the oral iron products very well to grow the market in that area. So I guess my second and third reasons is there is a very big market out there, which we believe Ferrocrew can grow as well as take share from.
Wonderful. Thank you so much, Tim, for coming on and talking to us.
Well, thank you very much.
Okay, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are at five, Open Orphan, down 2.3% to 13.88. At four, Cemec Atlantis Energy, up 14% to 16.25. At three, Salt Lake Potash, down about 4% to 29.75. They completed their, of course, institutional placement today. At two, Supply Atme Capital, up 42%, to 0.122. And at one, it's 4D Pharma, up half of 1% to 68.33. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Jangada Mines, sale of Valor shares for 1.75 million Canadian dollars. At four, Europe Metals, product marketing agreement. At three, Great Western Mining, operational update. At two, Vesarion, preliminary results. And at one, Salt Lake Potash, successful completion of institutional offer. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.